become a slight. Seems like it never ends. When we get to the other side, maybe then we'll make amends. It's the end of time, the end of time.
Good afternoon, welcome to Spectrum West. That's a bit of Lindsey Buckingham in the background there from his new CD, Seeds We Sow. It's a song called End of Time. It's going to be in Eau Claire at the State Theater on the 19th of November. I'm afraid he might be one of those elusives who don't grant interviews. You know, some of those big people don't mess with talking about themselves unless you can guarantee an audience of millions. And even though we're on our way to that number, we simply haven't reached it yet. So we'll just keep our fingers crossed. The jury's still out. We have a request in. We'll see if we can get him on the show. Anyway, welcome to Spectrum West, as I said. We do have a big entertainer on this show, however. Big in a couple senses. Louis Anderson doesn't dispute that, but I discovered he also has a big heart and actually enjoyed the conversation we had. I think that was more than just a talking point for him. He's performing in Eau Claire tomorrow night, and I'll share the dialogue we had earlier this week. Jim Oliver's back with a look at what's on stage in Western Wisconsin today. You're going to meet a young man who will be filing periodic reports for us here on Spectrum West. Brady Mern took a trip to Shell Lake, namely Theater in the Woods and the Erica Kwam Memorial Theater. We're excited to have his initial report. New Executive Director Gordon Murphy is here with a look at what's up and what's coming from the Chippewa Valley Symphony Orchestra. And we begin this edition of Spectrum West with this. It's the weekend of the Fall Salon, an exhibit of art centered around the theme Casting Shadows and presented by the arts consortium known as Earth Arts. In the St. Croix River Valley, enjoying a prominence as one heads in a northwesterly direction from the Chippewa Valley to that other valley. Karen Faust, a photographic artist and Earth Arts member, answered her phone, and I had a few requests, to which she gracefully responded. Well, let's hit the refresh button a bit about Earth Arts. It sounded to me when I was reading a description as if it might have been part of a mission statement. It said, more than 60 artists and artisans who promote creativity, mutual support, and awareness of the arts. Tell us a little bit more and refresh us on Earth Arts, would you please?
Well, it's a group of artists. We get together. We have two big events each year. We have the Fall Salon, and then we have the Spring Tour. It's basically to give us a chance to interact with the public and let them see what we do. And we get together periodically and like offer support to each other. You have questions. You have people to help you find answers. It's just a good group.
I remember talking to someone else involved with another group, and the word competition arose, and I was just curious as to how much competition an artist feels, you know, in relation to other people who are vying for the same kind of attention.
Honestly, there's, you know, several photographers in the group, and I've never felt any kind of competition with them. I think we each kind of have our own niche, and even if they're similar, like I do landscape and wildlife, and I know there's, you know, a lot of other people out there that are doing the same thing, mm-hmm. but, you know, we each have different eyes, so I think we just bring something a little different to the table.
Potters, painters, glass artists, sculptors, jewelers, and photographers. That about cover it?
We also have fiber artists.
Oh, sure.
We have weavers and... one of the things that I saw today when I was looking that I thought was an interesting description was thread painting.
Thread painting?
Thread painting, yeah. It's a quilter, and so I can't tell you exactly what it is, but I thought it was an interesting description, and I bet she uses her stitches.
Yeah. Well, there's also people who sketch and things like that. That wasn't listed, but I guess that can be tossed in with the painters, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this weekend, it's the fifth annual Fall Salon Exhibition, and that is in Luck, Wisconsin. Interestingly, when I was putting these notes together, you always have to put the word Wisconsin after the word Luck, because it's such a common word, you have to let people know you're talking about a community. The theme is Casting Shadows. Tell me about where that theme came from.
Well, what we do is somewhere in the early part of the year, we just put out an email to all the members of the of Earth Arts, and you submit ideas for the Paul Salon. And then we pick, we put them out there, and we vote, and we come up with the top three, and then we have another vote to come down with the final selection.
So do you apply a theme and say, this is the theme of our show, and what you submit has to follow that theme?
Exactly, yep. The way you interpret the theme, the way each artist interprets the theme, is entirely up to themselves.
Ah, okay.
So, for instance, the one year our theme was Seeing Red. We had all kinds of pieces, like I put in a piece that had a cardinal sitting in a tree.
Hmm.
But there were pieces that expressed anger or, you know, didn't necessarily have the color red. Mm-hmm. But when you say seeing red, you know, it's a description for somebody getting angry, too.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
So, I mean, there's all kinds of different ways that you can look at it.
Mm-hmm. Well, as we speak, there's a public reception going on. It's on until 8 p.m. That means that we are all invited and encouraged to stop in at Cafe Wren in Luck, we meaning the public. And you mentioned the word vote a while ago. We can loosen up our voting skills for next month by voting in your event at the reception. Tell us about that.
Oh, that's right. You get a chance to vote for your favorite piece.
That's the People's Choice Award.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. And you go around and you get a ballot when you come in the door. And you go around and you look at all the pieces and decide which one is your favorite. And then you cast your ballot.
There are a few, at least a couple other awards, too. There's a Juror's Award, which is chosen by a guest artist that you have come in and look around and say, here's what I like. There's also an Exhibitor's Award, and so that includes all your members, correct?
Correct.
And you have, is it called the Solani Award?
Exactly. That's what the awards are called, the Solanis. this is a really fun event. And so, you know, it sounds kind of silly, but it was a fun name we came up with.
And each year you have what, a different member create the award itself?
Yes.
What does this year's award look like?
We don't know that till the night of the reception.
Oh, okay.
That's the other fun thing about this is, you know, I kind of know who's going to be, who the artists are who have signed up, but I have no idea what their work is going to be like. I don't know, for instance, I don't know that a photographer isn't going to turn in a painting.
Hmm.
Or, you know, because you can do, it's, the whole idea is to stretch,
mm-hmm.
you know.
How about the Solani Award itself? Is that does that always turn out to be a trophy, or can it be a plaque?
It's all kinds of things. It's the plaque. It was kind of it's been a trophy in the past of, you know, different sculpture types.
Oh, sure.
And
mm-hmm.
I don't know, Wynn is a potter. Wynn Herberger is doing the Solanis this year.
Okay.
Also, and she's a potter, so we don't know exactly what it's going to look like.
Maybe a loving cup of some kind, huh?
Maybe.
That'd be kind of cool. Yeah, a lot of golf tournaments have those wonderful trophies. Mm. So now this exhibit is going to move to Amory in November.
That's correct.
And where will that be?
That will be, I believe it'll be up. They usually put their new displays up the first of the month, but we'll have an opening on November 9th. It's from 5 until 8 p.m. And then the work will be there for the entire month of November.
And that's at the Art Z Gallery.
Correct. Okay. In downtown Amory.
Downtown Amory. We've talked to them in previous time. So now you have a fall event and a spring event, you said.
Mm-hmm.
Spring event all planned?
The spring event, the dates are planned. It'll be the 12th annual spring tour. And it runs the weekend of May 4th and 5th.
Yeah, this neck of Wisconsin really has a lot of tours, fall and spring. Here on Spectrum West, we have to juggle, you know, who we talk to every year because there are several.
Yeah, there's a lot of artists in this area.
Cafe Wren, I guess it's luck is small enough we don't have to tell people how to get there, right?
Well, I could give you the address if you want that.
Go ahead.
It's 2596 State Highway 35. It's right on Highway 35. You can't miss it.
Thanks for taking the time with me.
Thank you.
Good luck. You had to know I'd get luck in there one more time. The opening public reception going on right now, as we said earlier, until 8 o'clock tonight at Cafe Wren. When you're here, you're in luck. That's their slogan for the community. It's kind of cute. Again, your opportunity to vote for the People's Choice Award and meet the artists themselves. The website is earthartswi.org. 16 after 5 here on Spectrum West.
Support for WPR comes from Wisconsin Credit Union, announcing a new location in Eau Claire at the corner of Claremont Avenue and Craig Road. Complete information, including membership and loan applications, is at wisconsincu.org. Support also comes from the Chippewa Valley Symphony, presenting the Second Sight Concert, guest hosted by Lori Skelton, on Saturday, October 20th in Gantner Hall. Tickets are available at 832-6366 or at cvsymphony.org.
Spectrum West, I'm Al Ross. We appreciate you being with us. Next Sunday, the 28th, Peter Yarrow returns to our neck of the woods with a 7:30 p.m. concert at the Barron Area Community Center. If you kicked yourself for missing his recent appearance in Chippewa Falls, it's your chance to make it up to yourself. Tickets via phone at 715-537-6666. Well, a couple months ago, a young man named Brady showed up on our doorstep, recording equipment and energy for the future in hand, asking if there was anything he could do for us. The Chippewa Falls native had now graduated from U of M in the Twin Cities, had gained some valuable experience writing features, editing copy, and blogging for the student magazine, and volunteering for the Radio K, the university radio station, as an associate producer. As an arts and culture reporter, he contributed pieces on a regular basis, specializing in spending recorded time with people, artists, and experts, turning the conversation into an issue-enhancing experience. So, Brady, what can we ask you to do? I know. We've all marveled at how many marvelous theater venues we have in West Wisconsin. Mostly, we talk about the events held therein. Wouldn't it be nice to talk about the places, their histories, their strengths, their backstages and backstories? People who do what's necessary to keep the doors open. So, Brady, let's do a series on those wonderful venues, and let's begin with the Erica Quam Memorial Theater in Shell Lake. How does that sound? Brady? Yo, Brady! Well, look at that. He's already in Shell Lake.
Walk into this church, and you won't find Dr. Teeth in the Electric Mayhem.
Which am us? Yeah.
But things are still amiss.
They don't look like Presbyterians to me.
If you could open the front door, you'd be on stage.
This was the former entrance to the church, which we no longer use as an entrance.
Where the altar stood, there's now stadium seating. And the church basement, once home to many a coffee clutch and a Sunday schooler, now houses a makeup table, a wardrobe, and lots of props. You're going to hear us use two terms interchangeably. The Theater in the Woods is a group of people. The Erica Quam Memorial Theater is a place. Lori Bacham, the theater's president, says the troupe existed long before taking stage in the church. But now they call this place home.
Yeah, it's ours. We really like it.
On a fall afternoon, she opened the place up and invited us in.
Spectrum West is getting an all-access pass for the Erica Quam Memorial Theater.
Here you'll find a nice blend of the professional and the amateurish. The lighting on stage is well done, yet linking backstage with downstairs is a baby monitor. And the curtains are a dark, dark green, almost by accident.
We kind of accumulated them along the way, you know, from different places that we performed.
Do you have the traditional ushers with flashlights in your
theater? No, we leave the lights on until everybody's seated.
Community theater, it seems, can be a hard knock life, especially if you own your own building. Not only are you casting roles and designing sets, you have to worry about upkeep.
Things you don't think about. A lawnmower and a snowblower.
Thankfully, a willingness to do what needs to be done, ingenuity, and creativity are hallmarks of the community theater type.
We do the work. You do everything from clean the bathrooms to star in a show.
Humility helps too. After all, prima donnas can't clean bathrooms. And unlike, say, the Guthrie, the Erica Quam Memorial Theater is a work in progress.
I don't know that we'll ever be done renovating and changing things.
Bacham says even the shape of stage can change.
We can make it into a thrust stage. We have had performances where we've actually put seating on the stage and made it a theater in the round.
This Christmas, Theater in the Woods is putting on a dinner theater.
The Trial of Ebenezer Scrooge.
And springtime brings the Greek play...
Greek tragedy.
Antigone.
We've not ever done anything like this before, so it's a challenge.
The layout, the stage, the plays themselves, even your choice of costuming, are limited only by directorial imagination.
Okay, so we're walking into the costume area and I can see all kinds of things.
an expansive wardrobe is housed in the old church basement.
We've done Shakespeare, so we've got Shakespearean costumes.
Big storage containers, corsets, garters, even things for dwarves, elves, and nymphs. India is a box.
We have turn of the century, 40s, 50s, and 60s. We have some fantasy things. People will donate wedding dresses and prom dresses and old suits.
Amongst the costuming and throughout the basement, you'll find props, lots of them.
You have an old wheelchair here, Lori. Was that from a production of Annie, and that was FDR's wheelchair?
Actually, I used that. I directed Annie in Siren last year, and I borrowed this.
It's neat to be able to look at props and imagine what it was used for and to sometimes be right.
Yeah.
Back upstairs, in the audience entryway, I see what could be the lamp from Narnia.
And that may have come for Chronicles of Narnia.
In the garage.
We don't let people call it the garage or the shed.
Rather, the shop out back. Lori shows me an extra stage. This one, disassembled, has done shows on the road.
How long ago was that you did that?
Probably 8 or 9 years ago. It was a long time ago.
Okay, so the portable stage could use some fresh air.
Before they took up residence at the Erica Quam Memorial Theater, the gang at Theater in the Woods performed at community centers and movie theaters and applied their makeup at friendly houses.
And then walked over to the theater.
So you hope it didn't rain.
Yeah, exactly.
They even managed to turn a grocery store into a performing arts space, as Bachum explains.
Well, it was a big empty building, and so we adapted it to use it as a theater. We built a stage, and we used it as rehearsal space and storage space.
So the Theater in the Woods performers really have had experience with adapting spaces. And a church, by that measure, is a much easier starting place, though some telltale signs of the religious reign. I mentioned the basement. Well, in that basement is a kitchen large enough to feed an entire congregation. And the old church basement ladies didn't take their silverware with them.
Oh, they left us all their dishes and glassware.
And just outside the front doors.
This is the church's original marquee. You've painted over the bits about it being a Methodist.
Yeah, right.
And then, of course, there's the stained windows. Offstage left, you'll find two covered up with boards. And if you take the basement stairs from stage left, you'll find the only two windows in operation, casting their brilliant amber light.
So the Methodists weren't big on scenes from the Bible on their stained panes? I just see a lot of colors.
Two gigantic windows in the former sanctuary, now the auditorium, are covered with curtains. And as tour guide Lori Bachum points out,
never felt comfortable doing anything permanently to those windows. And there's been discussion about, you know, taking the stained glass out of them and putting them someplace else, but we don't know what we would do with them.
Left open, they might interfere with your suspension of disbelief, especially at a daytime matinee. Speaking of disbelief, Bachum says the theater has a liquor license, albeit only for wine and beer. They'll even let you eat in your seat.
The chairs we bought through a fundraiser where a person could purchase a chair for $100.
Looking behind your seat back, you're likely to find a placard naming someone or some local business supporting the theater. And did I mention it's only two blocks north of downtown Shell Lake?
We're two blocks from Main Street, and we're a block from Highway 63.
Good location for a church and a good location for a theater.
It is.
The troops' flock is large, but President Bachum says the Theater in the Woods could always use more able bodies.
But we always can use more. Everything we do is volunteer. We don't have any paid staff. We don't have any paid directors. You know, everything is volunteer.
It takes about 50 to 60 people to cover all aspects of each production, and hundreds more to fill the seats over the show's run.
We get very close to full houses, and we usually do 3 to 4 performances.
Bachum is proof that community theater can be a viable, even demanding, avocation.
I've been involved in theater since I was in high school. I actually started out college as a theater major, but then decided that, you know, you can't really eat on a theater major. and I really like teaching.
Now, as a retired teacher and retiring theater president, Bachum says she'll be spending more time with her grandson, trying to instill in him a love of theater.
I will. He's 2, so I have time.
There's one last role she'd like to play, that of the unsinkable Molly Brown.
I ain't down yet.
You're down, Molly. Holler, Uncle.
I ain't never shout and uncle to you and nobody, because I ain't never down.
Come on, Molly, you're tuckered. Why don't you quit?
Sure I'm tuckered and I might give out, but I won't give in.
And regardless of whether she gets that role, Bacham shares this philosophy.
Everybody who comes gets to play?
To this, she and the gang have held for more than 20 years, 10 of those at their beloved church-turned theater.
Thank you very, very much for talking to me and for sharing your story with Spectrum West. It was nice to go on a tour of the facilities.
Thank you, Brady. This was very, very fun. Very fun to share Theater in the Woods with you. Thank you.
In Shell Lake, I'm Brady Mern for Spectrum West.
There you go, ladies and gentlemen. Brady Mern, he'll be contributing a story about a theater or venue, hopefully at least every month, and who knows what else might pop up. He has an appetite for experience on the level of a high school football player coming home after practice has for food. We're happy to have him on the crew. Brady Mern, 527, ladies and gentlemen. By the way, tomorrow evening at the Erica Kwan Memorial Theater in Shell Lake, vocalist Claudia Schmidt returns. Showtime 7:30, info and tickets at TITW, that's theaterinthewoods.org.
Our What Do You Know overnight trip from Western Wisconsin is now booking. We'll depart Hudson, Menominee, and Eau Claire on Friday, December 14th via Lamer's Motor Coach to stay at the Campus Inn on State Street. Tour WPR's Madison headquarters, see a play at the Overture Center, or just browse the shops. The next morning, it's off to Monona Terrace to see Michael Feldman's What Do You Know, after which we'll join Michael and the crew for lunch at the Great Dane. Rooms start at $150. Details are available at WPR.org/Eau Claire.
Spectrum West at 528 on a Friday, the 19th of October. The Flyway Film Festival going on this weekend in both Pepin and Stockholm. Info at flywayfilmfest.org. That's festival, not fest. I shortened it up. Shouldn't have done that. Remember, Sunday evening, it's the Dances and Disguises benefit concert, including a silent auction to support the vital work of the Chippewa Valley Youth Symphony. That's at Gantner Concert Hall at UW Eau Claire. Tickets at the door, I'm sure. Let's see, it's the week of the big 13th annual Chippewa Valley Book Festival. Lots of presentations, meet and greets. All the information you need is at the L.A. Phillips Public Library in Eau Claire or online at cvbookfest.org. Gordon Murphy is the new executive director of the Chippewa Valley Symphony Orchestra. He's a musician and now spokesperson for the ensemble, which kicks off its 2012-2013 season tomorrow evening. He was kind enough to pay us a visit to talk all about it. You're playing another Mahler piece, I see. After last season's Mahler performance, looks like you guys are getting a little cocky. or am I mistaken in that maybe all Mahler pieces are not real difficult?
I would say that almost every Mahler piece is difficult, and the Sixth Symphony is no exception. It's a very interesting piece. It's a pre-atonal piece in that it's rooted in the classical traditions and structure, and it's rooted in the romantic idea of sounds and tonal structures, but it kind of plays a little bit with some romantic tones that don't quite fit all the time, but just plays with it.
That was Mahler's key to success, was that he was quirky?
Well, he was a very interesting person. There's no doubt about that. But he had a big dedication to structure and form. And so this is, without a doubt, a very formally structured piece in the classical sense with a sonata allegro form in the first movement. But he did lead a very interesting life. This was written in 1903 to 1904.
Oh, that sounds contemporary in relation to other composers.
Right. Mahler transposes two eras. Mm-hmm. This was toward the end of his life. This is a piece where he experimented with different instruments. The symphony actually had to build a special hammer, a large hammer, a percussion instrument to sound several passages in the piece.
Part of the mission of the Chippewa Valley Symphony Orchestra is to gather some interest from people who may not in the past have considered themselves classical music buffs. So when you say that Mahler, you know, is known for structure, I'm going to put myself in the position of someone who says,
I'd love to come to a Chippewa Valley Symphony Orchestra concert, because if I listen to Brahms or Beethoven, that sounds structured to me. So what are you talking about as far as structure goes? Can you define that?
You bet. You know, structure is a way of structuring both melody, motives, and where and how those melodies and motives are played. Mm. You could start off with a real simple motive, just a 3 notes, 4 notes, or 10-note passage, and then you would develop that. Developing a melody, much like a jazz musician would take a series of 5 tones and develop that, work that throughout the whole piece. And the other aspect of form would be the harmonic structure, where the resulting chords of his orchestration would help anchor the pieces. So in other words, the piece might start out on a particular chordal structure and might end on that chord structure. It might reference that. Midway through the piece, the chord might be some other anchor point. To illustrate that even further, every song, even songs on the radio, have anchor points and have structure and form.
Yeah, and that's what I was going to jump in with, is, and I appreciate you taking the time to explain this, because I understand structure as it relates to contemporary music, because contemporary music that we hear, as you said, on the radio has verse, verse, chorus, that kind of structure. So now I guess I'm seeing the picture a little better. As a musician, do you feel structure when you're playing a piece?
Absolutely, without a doubt. That's a huge part of playing a piece. And when you are playing any piece and the theme goes from one section of the orchestra to the other, you can hear it. And when it comes to the section you're playing in and you play the theme, it is, you know, an amazing thing to play it and feel it and hear it. And it's very similar, again, to any kind of jazz improvisation. In the same kind of structure and feel.
Yeah, thanks for that. Well, tell us a little bit generally about the symphony. Now, you are the third executive director within the last year or so, maybe year and a half. We need to point out that does not spell trouble within the organization. It's just the fact that people move around nowadays.
Well, that's really true. This is a position that I've looked at for a number of years and thought I might like to have this position. So when Barry left. Barry hit.
For a good opportunity.
For a wonderful opportunity.
I saw him marching his band members at Oktoberfest, by the way, and he looked very proud going through the Northern Wisconsin State Fairgrounds.
And I'm sure he's doing a wonderful job there. And Barry was the transition executive director between Mark Blasky and me, and he did a wonderful job. And he had a wonderful opportunity with a band up at Chippewa Falls High School. And when this job became available, it kind of came with a wonderful time in my life where I was a part of a project that was wrapping up, so I was able to see a project to its end. Then the idea of helping an organization that I loved a lot.
You've been a board member.
I've been a board member for a number of years, and I was a musician in the orchestra for 22, 23 years. And I was the president of the Orchestra Council during that time.
So you're going up the ladder.
That's right. And there's a lot of opportunities to structure the office a little bit more efficiently using computers, being able to capture the information we need to just process things more efficiently. Mm-hmm. So there's opportunities there. But one of the biggest personal opportunity was being able to be more a part of the community as opposed to being in a position at a company where you devoted all your time to that company, which is a fine thing to do, a thing that many people do, and I was very happy to do. But it's wonderful to have a position where you can actually reach out and be a part of the community, get to know people better, things that I certainly like to do.
Gordon Murphy is our guest. He's the executive director, Chippewa Valley Symphony Orchestra. Tomorrow evening's concert is called Second Sight. It's at Gentner Concert Hall, Haas Fine Arts Center, 7:30 p.m. It features Mahler's Symphony No. 6. On a light note, Nobu had a birthday just recently. The conductor and music director of the orchestra turned 50.
Yes, he did.
You guys had kind of a little gala party for him. That went well, I guess.
Yes, it went very well. It was a surprise birthday party. as best as I know, it was a real surprise party.
And he's an animate guy. That's great. Total of 5 concerts in the Chippewa Valley Symphony Orchestra scheduled this year.
As you know, our name is Chippewa Valley Symphony.
You bet.
So our holiday concert, we are going to Chippewa Falls, and I believe that's the first time we've ever played in Chippewa Falls.
And you're at the auditorium at the high school?
Yes. Mm-hmm. We're really looking forward to that, to being a part of the community up there. The orchestra has many members from Chippewa Falls.
Back to your directorial position. Do you have kind of your own personal mission as the executive director? I know you brought up bringing in more technology and making that work better for the orchestra. Anything else?
Well, there's several things. Well, 2 major things. One is to continue to grow this orchestra, grow it through reaching ever-increasing excellence. It would be a personal goal of mine to see that we are able to perhaps commission a new work that might correspond with the beginning of the Confluence Center.
Oh, sure.
If the Confluence project comes to fruition, then it would seem ideal to commission a new work. Then secondarily, this organization, like all organizations, has reached out to and affected many people in the community. There's really no place for members of previous orchestras to be honored and respected. And so I'd like to develop an alumni organization for musicians that have played previously.
How about a Hall of Fame?
Hall of Fame would be wonderful, too.
And why not?
And so there's a lot of things that way where I would like to keep people that have played in the orchestra for a number of years, make sure that they are acknowledged and respected. And going forward, I would like to see how that group could become another subgroup within the orchestra, just like the Friends and the Christmas Troll and other groups within the orchestra.
Very, very good idea. Gordon Murphy, thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
It's called Second Sight. Tomorrow evening, 7:30, Gantner Concert Hall, Haas Fine Arts Center, UW-Eau Claire, Mahler Symphony No. 6, the Chippewa Valley Symphony Orchestra. Maybe this is the season you discover this fine musical aggregation. Tickets will be available, of course, at the door. And the website is cvsymphony.org. Good luck to Gordon in his quest of making the organization even better than it is today. The time, 5:39, the show, Spectrum West. Thanks for joining us.
Support for WPR comes from Ken Vance Honda, featuring the redesigned 2013 Honda Accord. Introducing HondaLink, a cloud-based system that connects to digital content without a mobile phone. More at kenvance.com.
Here's what's coming up on stage in Western Wisconsin theater venues. Community Arts of Fall Creek will perform Fiddler on the Roof tonight, Saturday, and Sunday at the State Theater in Eau Claire. The University of Wisconsin-Eau Claire Theater Department will present Our Town tonight and Saturday. The play runs through October 28th in the Riverside Theater at the University. Play On, a production of the River Falls Community Theater, plays tonight and Saturday and next Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. The Eau Claire Children's Theater production of Duck for President opens next Friday at the Oxford Theater in Eau Claire. It's a Scream, a production of Cumberland ETC in Cumberland, plays tonight, Saturday, and Sunday, and next Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. The Menominee Theater Guild production of The Cat of Colton County plays tonight and Saturday in the Theater Guild studio. Star Spangled Girl plays tonight, Saturday, and Sunday at the Fannie Hill Dinner Theater in Eau Claire. The show will play weekends and selected weekdays through October 28th. Playing with Fire will run tonight, Saturday, and Sunday at the Festival Theater in St. Croix Falls. The show will run through October 27th. Moonlight and Magnolias plays tonight and will play Fridays and Saturdays through October 27th at the St. Croix Off-Broadway Dinner Theater in Hudson. And that's some of what's happening in local live theater. I'm Jim Oliver.
Yes, you are. Thank you, sir. Additional Spectrum memoranda. Tonight at the Heidi Center, it's the Big Chili Cook-Off, a fundraiser for The Heidi's commitment to young people. If you like chili, no need to cook tonight, folks. Sunday at the Heidi, a folk music novel with author and folk singer Scott Alaric. I hope that's pronounced right. A-L-A-R-I-K. Starts 4 p.m. Phone number 726-9000 at the Heidi. The website, cvca.net. Sunday at Peace Lutheran Church in Menominee, the Menominee Art Music Society presents a vocal and instrumental recital featuring several performers. It all begins at 2 p.m. The Ditch Lilies are appearing Sunday in Maiden Rock for the Art Word Project Outdoor Exhibit, which runs from 2 to 5:30 p.m. Tomorrow evening, there's an evening of highlights from upcoming performance season concerts, a gala preview at the Northern Lake Center for the Arts in Amory. There's also an October exhibit of stained glass up at the Northern Lakes Center. Did you know they're celebrating National Day on Writing Monday at UW-Eau Claire? There's a haiku for cookies, bake sale, 11 a.m. at the Davies Center, and lots, lots more. Well, gang, tomorrow night, in a widely anticipated downtown Eau Claire performance, comedian Louis Anderson will step to the microphone and do what he does so well, cause people to laugh, mostly out loud, but sometimes within, at stories that ring true with a lot of us who grew up in the mighty Midwest. If you're from Minnesota, he's a favorite son. If you're from Wisconsin, he's one of the few things for which you can cut Minnesota Husky amounts of slack. Louis Anderson's been getting jovial, often animated reactions from audiences for over 30 years now, giving solid credence to the adage about time flying when you're having fun. Certainly, the life of a comic isn't always chortles and giggles. There's real life, too, and for Louis, real life began by growing up in a pretty big family. One of 11 kids, wow, in a Minnesota family.
And we didn't even have a farm.
No trouble staying warm.
Isn't it?
In the winter. This is important, though. Where was your place in the pecking order?
A tenth.
Ah, so you were on the verge of being spoiled.
I was. Well, you know, when you're the tenth kid, families, big families, if people are not from a big family, they don't quite understand that the dynamics are the older kids grow up in a group, and then the middle kids grow up in a group, and then the younger kids grow up in a group. A lot of times it's like that.
Mm-hmm.
And so the older kids tell the middle kids how good they have it, and the middle kids tell the youngest kids that how lucky they are. You're lucky. Dad's nice now. He wasn't like that before. You're so lucky, you know, and I always found it very funny, you know, I always found it very, very, well, not funny always, but, you know, I always found like I think we were kind of spoiled because I think my parents had been worn down in essence, you know, and that you're right. We, you know, my little brother, he was obviously the baby, but people often call me a big baby. So
you did use the word funny. Did you have a funny family?
Yeah, very funny. I loved one thing about my dad. He did a really funny thing I didn't understand as a kid. But he had kind of a little bit of a mean sense of humor. But when people would go out the door after they had come to our house, when the door would slam, he would yell, "And stay out!" And it always made me laugh, even though as a young kid I didn't understand it. But he would say it, and sometimes they would come back in the door, and they'd go, "What was that?" He'd go, "How's the weather out?" And then he would do it again when the door shut, and it just always made me laugh. I think he was just being funny. I don't think he was really being mean. It was a little mean. But, you know, everybody kind of feels that way when people are over the house and then they leave, and everybody looks at each other and go, "I thought they'd never leave."
Yeah.
My mom was very funny, and so was my dad. He was a kind of an entertainer himself. Well, he was an entertainer. He was a trumpet player.
Oh.
By the time I was born, he was kind of done with that. So I never got to see that part of him. But, you know, I know he did play a lot of the same places I played in my life, which has always been a kind of a special, nice thing for me.
Yeah. Well, you know, our perspective from Wisconsin, we believe that Minnesota, just being Minnesota, has enough funny material in it. It's not surprising that you became a comedian. You, and then a large family to boot. You had hand-me-down clothes, I'll bet, the whole thing.
Well, I was a fat kid, so I didn't have too many hand-me-down clothes. I think I was the only really fat boy in that situation. And so I had to go down to Robert Hall's.
Oh,
you remember
sure.
Robert Hall's?
Yeah, I sure
Did you have
do.
Them over there?
Yep.
They were clothing stores, and I would go, and then Sid, who worked in the front, would yell back and go, "I've got another Husky for you." That's what big boy clothes were called back when I was a kid, Husky. you could hear all the fat kids walking to school because they got corduroys. And then as the year went on, they'd wear out and you couldn't hear them. They could sneak up on people.
I'm trying to imagine how a kid can, maintain a husky stature in a family of 11. You must have reached first for the mashed potatoes or something.
Well, my mom was a food, we were a butter family. Are you kidding me?
Oh, okay.
First words out of my mom's mouth at a restaurant were, "Can we get some extra butter?"
Oh, yeah.
And then the guy would say, "Well, let us seat your party first, ma'am."
Come on, Mom.
Yeah. No, my mom was a food pusher. "Are you hungry, Louie? We just ate. Well, you look a little hungry." In fact, my mom was the kind of person, if a kid that I was playing with looked too thin, she would say, "Invite him over for dinner so he can have a nice hot meal."
What a nice mom you had.
Yeah, she was the sweetest person. Raised 11 kids. I never heard her swear once.
Were you Catholic?
No.
Ah.
My dad was a musician.
Well, your comedy career is now past the 3-decade signpost. That's pretty cool. I mean, from that first competition I read about that landed you some time with Henny Youngman.
Yeah, we stayed friends for his whole life.
Did you really?
The rest of his life, yeah.
Tougher to write material for someone else than for yourself, or the other way around?
Absolutely tougher to write for other people.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, because my stuff is very organic to who I am. Like, I wrote a new joke not too long ago. I was at the Big Men's store. I bought a shirt. And I realized if I get one more X on my clothing, I'm next year's Super Bowl.
I was about to set you up for that joke. I have a question on my sheet that says, "Are you still adding X's on the tags of your clothes?"
Yeah. Oh, that's good. Well, we don't put X's on them anymore.
Ah.
We just put pictures of mammals in the different sections. Hey, do you have this in a sloth? Can I wear sloth and wildebeest together?
That's good. Yeah, I haven't seen that, but I'm going to take your word for it.
That's where my jokes come from. But it is harder to write, especially for Henny. But I wrote fat jokes for, he had a fat nephew, and he wanted him to be a comic. And so I wrote some jokes for him. And then I worked with Jimmy Walker, and I wrote jokes also. I wasn't a very good joke writer, but they really liked me. And so they took pity on me, and I got a little paycheck.
Yeah.
It was very nice. I never forgot how nice Jimmy and Henny and Rodney and Joan Rivers and Johnny Carson and all those people were terrific to me and really made a big difference in my career.
Our guest, comedian Louie Anderson, actor, producer, writer in the media sense, author in the literary sense, health nut. That's my little joke for the day.
You might be. Well,
yeah.
I am in the morning. I'm real good till around 9:30.
Ah.
And then it all falls apart.
That's when I become a
degenerate eater.
Any milestones over those over 3 decades that stick out for you?
My first special at the Guthrie Theater with PBS. Then we sold it to Showtime, and that's what really propelled my career as an established comic. That got me 2 more specials on HBO, and then another special on Showtime, and I just finished my 5th special on CMT. So I guess my specials, those were really big things to me. It really made me feel like, I had accomplished something. It was all that material. Mom Louie's Looking at Me, that special spurred my book, Dear Dad, which was another milestone, spurred my cartoon, Life with Louie. That special was used, what the animator did is he drew pictures of my family and then used that special, the audio of it, and he put it underneath those pictures of where I talk like my dad and I talk like my mom and I talk like my little brother and the character Louie. And he played it for me and said, "This is what I want to do. I want to make a show, and these are the characters I see when you talk." In fact, we just released the 25th anniversary of Mom Louie's Looking at Me on DVD.
Wow.
Those were the big things. Of course, the biggest event, the biggest single event would be the Johnny Carson Show, November 20th, 1984.
Not like you remember it or anything. Yeah.
Well, it was. That was like American Idol back then,
Oh, yeah.
If Johnny gave you the hi-ho, you had a career the next day.
You remember how you felt before you went out?
I was on top of the world because I had practiced for, since 1978 to 1984, that same 5.5, 6 minutes.
Uh-huh.
Every joke was as honed as I could make it. And Johnny loved it, and I crushed it, and he called me over and shook my hand, and I got the nod from him. And the rest of his time on TV, he always cared about me, and he was always I wish I would have understood how big of a deal that was at the time. I was a little full of myself, so I don't think I did as much. But now I really look back at that. you know, I used to watch that Tonight Show sitting on the arm of the couch with my dad and my mom.
Mm-hmm.
My dad loved the musicians because he was a musician, and I would watch the comedians. And here I am, a little kid from the projects in St. Paul, Minnesota, a little husky kid. And I was about to walk through the curtain that I'd watched people walk through hundreds of times.
Yeah.
And so it was quite a gigantic experience for me. I really can do one thing really good. I can tell jokes.
Yes, you can.
Just like, you know, what you do. If you're good at it, you can't really explain it to people. You just do it, you know. I mean, people go, how do you do that? And you go, well, I mean, there's a million things I do to have gotten to this point, but I can't explain them to you. It was a combination of a million things. So mm-hmm. October 10th was my 34th anniversary.
Congratulations.
Of doing stand-up comedy, so.
That's great.
But I've only been funny for about 10 years.
Yeah. And, you know, every time I see it on HBO, I DVR it. But the next time I watch Ferris Bueller, I'm going to look for you.
Yeah, I'm on there.
Yeah, I know. What?
John Hughes was a big fan of mine. I have a good little story about that. I was on the set of Ferris Bueller, and Matthew Broderick came up to me and said, hey, you're a funny guy. John Hughes had me watch your tape, and it helped me with the movie.
Good.
And I felt like, should I be getting paid for this? No. I'm just kidding. You know, that's a very Midwestern thing, isn't it? Well,
it
somehow
is.
Am I then responsible for everything? And John just kind of threw me a bone and gave me a small part in it, and it was really sweet.
Mm-hmm. I was watching another video that you were a part of, the one on which you are standing on stage talking to young comedians and pretty serious about what they need to do and what they need to become if they're going to make it. And it's the same way, you know, as a baseball player. In order to get better, you got to play ball. For you, it was you can't just keep practicing. And I think you used the mirror as a tactic, but you have to be on stage.
Yeah, it's one of the things that you have to do to learn. You know, you can't learn how to make a brick wall. You can learn the fundamentals of it, but you eventually are going to have to make your own brick wall. And the first few will probably be pretty uneven, but maybe eventually only you'll be able to see the unevenness, and occasionally you'll get it right. And I think that's why I still do it, you know, because I'm looking for the perfect show. And also, you know, I'll work on a joke for 10 years to get it right.
Wow.
I always know when there's a good joke there. One I can point out was 10 years that took me to find the right tag to it. The joke always worked, but the joke didn't always kill it. I'll tell you the example. My mom would buy stuff, and she would show it to us and make us guess the price she paid for her clothes because she was so happy she got a good deal on it. She would say, kids, what do you think I paid for this? And I go, $900? And she'd go, Louie, $700, you know, and I would just, it would always get a laugh, right? Then one day, kids, what do you think I got this for? And I said, Halloween. And it was the joke, finally.
Yeah.
I had worded it wrong, and I didn't have the right punchline. The other one was clunkier, and this was perfect. And it always works. That would sometimes work. This always works.
When did it come to you?
About an hour ago.
So you started the joke 10 years ago.
A year ago.
Ah.
It was about a year ago. But it took me a long time. I always knew there was a joke there, and I'd search for it.
Just come to you in the shower, in the car? Or?
No, on stage, when I was about to deliver it.
Oh, cool. That's even better.
Yeah. Yeah, that's when they always come to me, is usually on stage or like you say, anywhere can come to me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, jokes make me happy, and jokes make other people happy, and they make me happy for a little different reason than they make the audience. For me, it's, you know, it's that brick wall.
Let's continue living in today. Let's just segue quickly to something called Louie's Big and Easy.
My new shirt line that's coming out.
Oh.
You know, I got so tired of not having shirts I like to wear, so I figure I'm going to make some shirts. And at least I'll have the shirts at the end of it.
Are they going to have the mammals on them?
No, they do have a catfish on the label. I would love to have done that, but I think it would have been, you know, people wouldn't understand it as much as fun as I would have with it.
Yeah.
But it's not a bad idea to do a line of sloth and wildebeest stuff.
Not at all. I think orangutan should be in there, too. That's a dandy animal.
Can I get this in an orangutan, please?
Yeah.
It's a great word to say, by the way.
It has rhythm to it. One of the lines you used in that more serious chat you had on stage for all the younger up-and-coming comedians is, you said, comics are uncomfortable. What does that mean?
Well, you know, they don't really have a place in the world. Oh, yeah? They don't really feel like they fit.
Hmm.
But then when they get up on stage, they find that that's their home. They don't really fit in hanging with the group at school. They don't really fit on the baseball team. They don't really fit in debate club. They don't really fit in very many social situations. And so they entertain so they can control the situation.
Mm-hmm. And from that discomfort comes pretty good material, I would think.
Yeah, I think what happens is they're sharing a side of themselves that otherwise they don't know how to share.
Awfully fun guy, and very funny guy. Louis Anderson, tomorrow night, Pizza Plus, South Barstow in downtown Eau Claire, 9 p.m. Tickets by phone or at brownpapertickets.com. I would be there if I could, but I can't. Spectrum Memo, good friend and newly married comedian Mary Mack, of whom Louis Anderson spoke very highly, I might add, is at the Mabel Tainter Center for the Arts in Menominee tomorrow night. She walks out on stage at 7:30. The Ellie Phillips Memorial Public Library in Eau Claire is hosting a discussion series featuring the work of legendary Irish poet William Butler Yeats. It begins Monday morning and continues each Monday morning through November 12th. It begins at 10:15 a.m., There's also an exhibit featuring five collage artists coming up at the library Sunday and on display through November 27th. It's opening on opening Sunday, by the way. There's a reception next Thursday, the 25th, 7 p.m. across the street at the Eau Claire Regional Arts Center. There's also a Thursday evening reception at 6 for their exhibit displaying the art of John Lawler and Aaron Lawler. Playing with Fire, a dramatic continuation of the Frankenstein story, is playing through Sunday at the Festival Theater in St. Croix Falls. All the info you need is at the website festivaltheater.org. Current exhibit, The Red Horse Gallery, Fountain City, features work by Bernie McNally, media listed as Nail Assemblage and Graphic Series. I blow that word every week. Red Horse is open Thursday through Saturday at noon. Yeah. Thanks, Hannah Lagerman, for promotional support. All the WPR folks who make the experience so all-encompassing. I'm Al Ross. Next week, the music of Yada. Davina joins the Chippewa Valley Jazz Orchestra. Woodturners converge on Eau Claire and more. Have yourself a wonderful weekend, everybody. And please, if you can, come back next Friday at 5.